the Mighty 990 Broadcast Center, it's time to wake up Memphis.
Well, good morning, Memphis, and welcome to the morning show. How is everyone? Grab your cup of coffee and let's go. That was a somber, calm way to open up. Typically, I'm screaming. I feel rather calm, you know, because there are so many different stories happening. I would say this week has been one of the busiest news weeks in a weird way, because it's not like there's been like the Orange Mount shooting. It's just on the state, national, and local level, it's like a triage of stories. So, for example, the former president of the United States, 6 o'clock this morning, he's going into the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. And we haven't talked a lot about this because there is so much news being generated on a local side here. But it is pretty remarkable when you see what they are doing towards the former president and the warfare using our justice system against President Trump. And I wanted to start on a very positive note, and we're going to get into Bucky's, believe me. We're going to get into bail reform. We're going to get into crime. But we've got to start with this audio because it made me smile, because you've got all of these union construction workers in the lower Manhattan, and President Trump is walking into the courthouse and he is welcomed with this. Cut to
away here, and he's going to talk here about New York City and quality of life issues they say that everyday Americans are dealing with. The Trump team tells us these union workers who are here to talk to the president are paying the price of failed economic policies currently in the country. So the president wants to talk with these people to gain their support. These are hardworking New Yorkers, okay, union members who have been working on this big construction site here in Midtown Manhattan near Trump Tower. And let's just take a listen to what the crowd's saying. So you can hear those chants, and then Brian and Ainsley, you guys can see the former president walking up and down here and shaking hands.
I mean, it's pretty remarkable to watch. I mean, there are hundreds of people on that sidewalk outside of that disgusting, dingy courthouse in Manhattan giving President Trump a hero's welcome. And the guy has got to be losing it. I mean, the composure that the president has currently, where he cannot get out and campaign. He cannot be the people's president. He's still doing that. He's just doing it from a courtroom. But they've got him locked up there Monday, Tuesday, Thursdays, and Fridays. Meanwhile, President Biden, they're trying to drug up the dude so he can get to a campaign stop here or there. Actually, he's had quite the busy itinerary over the last 2 days, but it's not stopping him from being the gaffe machine that we know him to be. So he had this moment yesterday. Unbelievable. You guys know Anchorman and that famous line from Ron Burgundy where he reads every piece of the teleprompter, and if someone's not actually putting the correct information on the teleprompter, like the Anchorman doesn't have the wherewithal to like not read that part, or to read when it says like pause or space or hold, wait for an applause, and you don't read that, obviously, right? You know how to read a prompter. Well, the president, his biggest political opponent in this campaign season is going to be that teleprompter and the person that's running the teleprompter, because yesterday he's speaking, God help us all, and he reads, well, take a listen for yourself. Cut 6.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Stop.
Okay, can we've got to play this again. So he's like, pause. So obviously, if you've never read a teleprompter, and that's okay if you haven't, not a lot of people have, I have in college, you can program in for that speaker, kind of like Simon Says. Like Simon Says, pause. And typically, a skilled spokesperson would know not to say the word pause. The president again says the word pause, and he's like looking around like so confused, like, why is everybody chanting 4 more years? Because you're at a campaign stop. Can we play that one more time? Just because this just makes me laugh that we're viewing this man as a serious contender to be the next president of the United States. I mean, he currently is, but you get my drift. All right, let's play it again. Cut six.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Pause. Four more years. Four more years.
Those sound like dudes that are chanting four more years. I would argue no true alpha man would support a dude like Biden. I mean, if you look at just his demeanor, how frail he is, and it's not just the age, no one in their right mind supports this guy who is truly a dude. We could get into the policies because the policies are all about trans things. And I feel like most American men still aren't on board with the whole LGBTQ trans agenda. Okay, so let's talk about some local stories. So I had to get that off my chest. So we're getting a Buc-ee's. Now, I have never been to Buc-ee's before in my entire life, so I don't know that I can adequately cover this news story. It's really big. That's the talking point that my boss, Todd Starnes, gave me. Ben, this is massive. Okay? So this is massive. Buc-ee's, a popular chain on roadside rest stops, famous for its beaver nuggets and clean restrooms, is coming to Tennessee. To West Tennessee. That's the real news hook. So this was actually shared in a very subtle way. You have State Senator Paige Wally, who I met recently. He represents Fayette and several other counties. He just posed what looked like a flyer on his Facebook page. And on the post, it said, "Buc-ee's, welcome to Fayette County." And then it blew up. He went on to say, "This is a great economic and a commercial achievement for our district." So the location is listed in the documents posted by the state senator as exit 28 off Interstate 40. That's just right outside the Shelby County line, a few miles outside of Memphis. So what else are they saying? The company confirmed it on Wednesday that they are absolutely working on this new location. As a matter of fact, Stan Beard is Buc-ee's director of real estate and development. He said the following in a statement: "We are very pleased that the Galloway project is taking shape in the planning and permitting process. We've still got work ahead of us, but Buc-ee's is continuing its process towards making Galloway our first home in West Tennessee." Buc-ee's, did you know, was founded in 1982. The company operates 48 travel centers in 8 different states, gets an A rating from almost everyone who's ever stopped at one. Okay, I don't know. Is that objective? Is that subjective? Is that personal bias by this reporter at Channel 3? I don't think so. I think every testimony that I've ever heard of a motorist stopping on the side of the road and going inside of a Buc-ee's would also say that they would give it an A+. Maybe I'll throw it out to our listeners. 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. So this guy in Fayette County, as soon as he saw the state senator's Facebook post on his Facebook page, he jumped in his car and just went to the site as though this was like a holy ground. And here's what he told Channel 3, Cut 19.
I saw it on Facebook this morning, I think probably from a Channel 3 post, and I was pretty happy. Buc-ee's is great. I've been to several of them. It is really hard to explain why a gas station is so special. You have to see it, I think. It's just so enormous, and they have, it's like an event. It's like a destination.
It's like an event. It's a destination. I mean, so skip Disneyland and Disney World and go to Buc-ee's. I mean, save yourself an arm and a leg. I have only had one thing from Buc-ee's. Actually, two. My boss went to Atlanta to speak, and he stopped at one, and he came back bearing gifts. And he gave me what were called beaver nuggets. Are they beaver nuggets? Buc-ee nuggets? I don't know. Beaver nuggets, yes. They're like, I don't know, they're fried. They're kind of sweet, but not like a cookie. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't understand the whole hype around beaver nuggets. And maybe that's blasphemy, And I am celebrating this because I just have heard great things. I mean, anytime you get a gas station that has clean bathrooms, give us more. But the Beaver Nuggets were mid, at best. But then Todd also got me like a Stanley Cup, but not like the actual Stanley Cup. It was a Beaver and a Bucky's Stanley Cup. And that has been very, very nice. So I'm curious to hear from our listeners this morning. Are we stoked about this? Maybe you want to work at Bucky's? There's an idea, because they typically employ 175 to 250 employees. And starting pay is between $17 and $19 an hour plus benefits. So there you go. If you want a job, this also means good news for those seeking potential jobs in the area. So tell me what you love about Bucky's, and I would love to indulge you in that conversation. And on the other side of the break, we've got new information coming from the Crime Commission, which I believe is the talking arm of the city and Mayor Paul Young's office, and they are touting new numbers. They always have the data, the numbers, and they're touting that crime, violent crime specifically, is dropping. Okay. So we're going to jump into that on the other side of the break, but I'll throw that question out to you like a verbal poll. Yes or no? Do you think violent crime is dropping? 901-260-5926. We'll be right back.
If we don't sound the alarm now, what's going to happen this summer when the kids are out of school? It's calling all parents to please, please, let's just take a look at our kids and what they're doing and who they're hanging out with. And I had to go along the interstate, and my friends, neighbors, loved ones saw me pick it up trash because something that my son had done. I think I would pay a little bit more attention.
All right, that was Shelby County Sheriff Floyd Bonner. Welcome back to the morning show. Ben Dieter here. This is after the Parental Accountability Act, which was sponsored by Senator Brent Taylor and also John Gillespie. By the way, Brent Taylor is going to be joining the Whitehaven Republican Club tonight in Whitehaven. And I'll share more information about that, but we all should get out there and support the senator and that fantastic club of conservatives in Whitehaven. Back to the Parental Accountability Act. So, sponsored by Brent and also John Gillespie. Well, it passed in both chambers this week. So it is headed to the desk of Governor Bill Lee. And what the Parental Accountability Act would do, and that's what you were hearing from our sheriff, Floyd Bonner, is not only would parents of kids who commit crimes in Tennessee face fines up to $1,000, so a gram for each offense after the first one, but then also, I was reading through the legislation, after subsequent crimes, if parents cannot afford that fine, they will have to work it off through community service. Is that interesting or what? So this comes after, so there's a series of stories happening with juvenile crime and the sheriff. On Tuesday, the sheriff came out and released a statement and basically said, parents out there, our jail is so full right now, you've got to start watching your kids. Like, someone's got to start parenting, because my deputies, we're filled to the brim. So right now, the county's juvenile facility is full, nearing capacity, what they would say. 118 juvenile offenders are currently being held there. The youngest was 13 years old. So that's what I find very interesting, because the activists in town are saying, well, that's a huge problem, right? Like, we need to do something about that many kids being inside juvenile, and they want them to release them out onto the streets. I'm not making this up. And the sheriff is saying, no, if we need to build another jail, we will absolutely build another jail. But let's avoid having to max out capacity by just having parents parent. So this is what the Parental Accountability Act would do. And do you think that if these parents of these thuglings that are on demon time, as we learned by the city councilwoman yesterday, all right, where after 10 o'clock at night, they go crazy across the streets of Memphis, will they think twice about how they parent if they know that they are going to be fined $1,000? And if they can't afford the $1,000, which I'm assuming a lot of them will not be able to do, they're going to have to spend their Saturdays cleaning up trash in downtown Memphis. I'd be curious. 901-260-5926. So anyways, you can give us a call and we'll get you on air. Meanwhile, the Shelby County Crime Commission releases a new study. This says crime is actually going down despite your eyes and despite your ears in the sense of safety that has been shattered here. So what they said in these numbers released in this report, during the first 3 months of this year, they saw a 10% decrease in major violent crime in the first quarter of this year compared to last year. From January to March of this year, there were declines of nearly 6% in murders, 30% in rapes. This is what is down 16% in robberies and 8% in aggravated assaults reported across the Bluff City. They also included in this report shared numbers by the TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, adding that the records show overall crime was nearly 14% less during the first quarter of this year. So from January to March compared to the first quarter of 2023. Now, I don't know, because the Crime Commission then passes these numbers over to MPD, and the MPD, Police Chief CJ Davis, had the following to say. Well, provocative policing strategies, data-driven approaches, community engagement initiatives, and partnerships with other criminal justice stakeholders have played a crucial role in improving public safety for all of our citizens. While we celebrate this milestone, is this a milestone? Do we feel like we have hit a milestone? What is it? It's today, the 25th in April. If this is a milestone, this milestone needs to be dismantled. Goes on to say, while we celebrate this milestone, we recognize that our work is far from over. Well, it better be far from over, because you're getting paid $280,000 and crime is not going down. I call absolute BS. This report is much like what the Daily Memphian will have at the top of every one of their news stories, which is that crime is on the low. And it's the same talking points coming down from the Biden administration. They have the audacity to go on a crime is down tour in cities like Chicago, where it is a war zone. Now, they haven't showed face in Memphis, which would be interesting to see the reception that they would get. And they're also saying that they have historic lows when it comes to crime. That's not the reality. And we've detailed that on the morning show. But Heather McDonald is one of my favorite commentators. She's also a fantastic author, and she gets into these numbers. And she was on the Megyn Kelly show yesterday. She wrote a book called When Race Trumps Merit. Highly encourage you read it. And she took a stab at these numbers that people like the Crime Commission, people like the FBI, people like the Biden administration are trying to share to terrorize citizens of this country, and debunking the narrative that crime is at an all-time low. Take a listen to Heather here in Cut 21.
Crime is still way up over 2019. The post-George Floyd crime epidemic, the anarchy that has broken out ever since we celebrated rioters, ever since we celebrated looting, ever since we celebrated shooting at police officers, destroying police precincts, courthouses, that has not gone away. And Asher admitted that. He's looking at third quarter rates of 2023. We don't have the full 2023 data, but here's the reality, Megan. Carjackings in 2023 are still up 93% compared to pre-George Floyd race riots of 2019. Car thefts are up 105% compared to 2019. Homicides are up 18%. And if you go back further to when the real glorification of, frankly, black crime began in 2014 with the whole Michael Brown hands up, don't shoot narrative, that was completely false, but that was amplified by the mainstream media and CNN and MSNBC. Homicides are up 40% in 2022 compared to 2014. The reality today remains anarchy unlike we've ever seen.
Anarchy like we've never seen. And the thing about all of this is we've created this, and I think it's completely intentional. We've got to have chaos in the streets. And I was listening to Todd's show yesterday, and he was talking about the crime problem that we have in the city of Memphis. And he said, I'm going to butcher this, it's not a direct quote, but we're getting ready to watch a city that has been known for blues, known for Elvis, known for B.B. King, for its barbecue, descend into absolute anarchy. I mean, I would make the argument that we're already there. Yet you've got the Daily Memphian. This story was up by WMC Channel 5, telling all of us that violent crime is actually dropping. No, we are outpacing homicides, which I would argue, and I'm not a I am a political scientist, but I'm not like a data analyst, so maybe I need to take two steps back. But would you say that the most egregious act of crime is killing someone? Okay, because if that is the case, we are outpacing last year's homicide numbers. And last year, we got to 399, or was it 400 homicides? And we're already outpacing last year's numbers. So, curious to hear from our listeners, do you believe the Crime Commission and the Daily Memphian, which I believe is the propaganda arm for the city of Memphis and the Mayor Paul Young administration? On the other side of the break, coming up, we've got Judge Joe Brown. He's joining the show at 8:05. He has a lot to say specifically on what's happening in these neighborhoods like Orange Mound, Raleigh, Fraser. Also at 8:35, very excited to welcome in the folks over at Bell Tower. They created our signature KWAM mugs. Maybe you've got one. They're going to be live in studio. They've got a big, exciting festival taking place this weekend. And then, of course, Steve Gill joins the show next, because these colleges are now making deals with these Hamas supporters and protesters. And I threw it out on my Twitter yesterday. How many days until what we saw at Columbia, and it's still happening, Yale, these Ivy League institutions on the East Coast, start at the University of Memphis? Like, the theater kids are just waiting to get their tents sent to them by George Soros. And we're going to see the same thing at the University of Memphis. We'll get into that coming up next. Don't go away.
We are entering a period of high alert for the next 3 days. And that is why I urge all of you to talk to your friends as well and let them know that we may need people to turn up quickly, en masse, in front of the encampment to defend the encampment. Will you be ready to rally for your comrades?
Yeah! Oh, my God. Okay, so welcome back to the morning show. That was on Yale's campus yesterday. You've got a lot of little Hamas kiddos running around saying, we are going to band together as comrades and negotiate a deal as though they are hostages with their Ivy League institutions. This as Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, and a group of Republican colleagues on the House face quite the nasty response when they took a trip to Columbia University yesterday. And held a big presser. We'll jump into that in one moment. Here to break down the latest, Steve Gill, great political contributor out of Nashville. Steve, have they started the protests at Vanderbilt? I'm just giving maybe a weekend here in Memphis, and these theater kids are going to grab their tents and they're going to pitch them right on the front lawn at the University of Memphis. What is going on?
Yeah, I'm surprised, frankly, that I have not seen any reports of any sort of encampment at Vanderbilt University at this point, or Middle Tennessee State University, as you point out, at Memphis. We're not seeing the same thing. Now, we did see it at the University of Texas in Austin, where police moved them out. You know, they don't really tolerate that stuff in Austin, Texas, as they do at Yale and Harvard and Columbia and Berkeley and these other left-wing campuses. Of course, it's interesting that, Austin is often referred to as the capital of Texas, surrounded by Texas, because it is a liberal, you know, city, a liberal establishment. And, you know, campuses are rife with the professors who are just, you know, putting their liberal propaganda out there. And we're seeing, you know, after, you know, generations of this, that there is very little education coming out of these institutions, but a lot of activism.
So there was a reporter that asked a couple of these pro-Hamas supporters what they were protesting about. And I want you to get your reaction to this. I'm sure you saw it. Cut number five.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stop. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
Oh.
I came from Columbia. I was there off on Columbia, and we came down. They said NYU...
So, Steve,
I've heard there's lots of problems, but I don't really know anything. If there was ever a better example, I mean, exhibit one, if you might say, in a court of law, exhibit one of useful idiots being funded by somebody outside. Again, you look at these tents, they're all exactly the same. I mean, did REI have a discount? Did these camping stores have a you know, buy one, get one free deal so that you've got 50, 60 tents that are identical suddenly set up on these various campuses around the country? Who's funding this? And more importantly, who thinks that supporting terrorism, the atrocities that happened on October 7th, is anything other than a mindless temper tantrum by children who don't even know what they're talking about? They're shouting, "We are Hamas. We support Hamas." They support the murder of innocent people. These young women in particular support naked and half-naked bodies of murdered and raped women being dragged through the streets and videotaped by these Hamas monsters. And that's the side they're choosing to take?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we just send them over to Gaza if it's such a utopia there. Maybe all of these Ivy League students, they get on a plane and we send them over there and they can fight alongside of the quote unquote resistance. Now, it was funny. The New York Post did a couple different pieces on what these kids are eating, because on one hand, the pro-Hamas hunger strikers at Yale, they did this to decry capitalism. I mean, it's like the trilogy of victimology with these people. So they had this strike where they were not going to be eating for a week. Again, I guess to show solidarity with Gazans, but they got really hungry. So the university at Yale brought in sushi rolls in Columbia.
Not pizza.
Exactly.
Sushi roll.
So yes, in
Columbia.
Right. So Columbia, their protester diet, because while their tantrums continue, their bellies apparently are full. They were handed nuts, granola bars, and overpriced sandwiches. They were being handed out like candy to these protesters. And yet they are the victims here. What? This is the problem. The higher you reach on the hierarchy of victimhood, the more benefits you receive.
Well, and you can imagine the trash and refuse, the empty sandwich bags that are just being left and trashing the place while they're celebrating, you can't make this up, Earth Day on campuses. And then why aren't these students immediately being suspended by the universities as they are being arrested and causing violence and threatening violence on campus? You know, if you use the wrong he, him, her pronoun, you could be suspended from school. Shouting into the face of a Jewish student, "You should die, go back to Poland," is acceptable at these liberal universities. They should be suspended. And if they are foreign students who are here on a student visa, the moment they are suspended, their visa should be revoked. They should literally be perp walked to a plane and sent back to whatever third world hellhole they're here, avoiding, so that they can, chant at their $80,000 to $90,000 a year tuition college against America and how they hate America. And Ben, just think, for example, that these colleges and universities are having them wave the Hamas flag, wear these, Hamas gear, distribute, because these are pre-printed signs. We are Hamas. This is now Hamas territory. They are literally saying they are terrorists. Can you imagine if on these same college campuses you had some conservatives waving Confederate battle flags, telling black students to go back to Africa, the same way we're seeing these Jewish students told to, go to Poland, go back to your home country? Would it be tolerated for a moment if it was Confederate battle flags and people shouting in the faces of black students, go back to Africa?
Yeah, they would be removed immediately, and all of their credits would be canceled on spot. So, speaking of victimhood, enters the chat State Rep Justin Jones from Nashville. What a mess up there, Steve. I don't even understand what the feuds are about at this point. He's just screaming racist, racist, racist. Well, Channel 5 did a deep dive. It was like a 12-minute package on Channel 5. Phil Williams, who is also a raging leftist, did the piece. So what you're going to hear, it's whittled down to 48 seconds. So Phil Williams interviews Justin Jones. The issue for Phil is that he is also, despite being a leftist and on their side, is a white dude as well. You can't make this up. Take a listen to this in Cut 11.
This has been a session marked by vitriol and bullying from majority of white men who run this Capitol.
Even my questions about that incident Jones charged reflected my own biases.
Instead of calling out the acts of racism, it is more offensive to you that I call someone a racist for acting as in a racist manner than for them acting racist. And that is wrong.
Still, it was such a shocking scene that I wanted to get another opinion.
Do you think that Leader Lambeth is a racist?
No, I don't think Leader Lambeth is a racist.
What, was it appropriate for Representative Jones to call him a racist?
I've never called anyone a racist. I don't do that. It takes the air out of a room.
So that was the leader of the Black Caucus of Democrats in Tennessee from Knoxville. And I wanted to get your reaction, because it seems like these Justin Pearson, Justin Jones of the world, they've pushed the envelope so far to the extreme left that even the Democrats are disavowing their foolish behavior, Steve.
Well, and behind the scenes, the Democratic leadership, even the black leadership in the Democrat House and Senate, they are disgusted. They are dismayed. They don't know what to do about the out of control antics of the Justins. Now, Justin Pearson is not as bad as Justin Jones, but it's two peas in a pod, and the elitist Justin Pearson, who went to an elite Ivy League school, well, I don't know if you've ever seen the videotape of when he was running for president of the student body with his clipped short hair and very white communication skills, is now wearing a dashika on the floor to show his African heritage. I don't know that the guy's ever been to Africa, much less, that his, legacy in the last couple of generations came from Africa. And yet he's more important to him to identify with Africa than it is to identify with, well, say Memphis, where there are serious, serious problems in Memphis when it comes to crime and poverty and lack of education. And yet this guy is making his service in the legislature about him, not about his constituents. And the same thing is true with Justin Jones, that neither of these guys have or will ever accomplish anything legislatively for their districts, for their constituents, because it's not about them. And it's all about them and not their constituents when they're, screaming racism, claiming that when their mic gets cut off because they are off the record of what bill is being considered, that enforcing the rules is somehow racist, is somehow an attack on them. Again, they're there for a show about them, not to actually accomplish anything. The issues they claim to care about would have them focused on crime in Nashville, in their district, on Memphis crime, on the murder rate, on the fact that there is seemingly no solution to the problems plaguing Memphis, other than we need a tax hike and we need more basketball courts, which is where the Orange Mound shooting took place.
Yeah, well said. Way to land the plane. And the fact that they're still running around wearing masks, I was watching some of the debate on the House floor yesterday. And you're right, Justin Pearson, who went to Bowdoin College, which is like a prestigious institution on the East Coast, he's still masked up. It's like the theatrics with these activists turned legislators is just unbelievable. Laughable, but sad. Steve, thanks for dropping by. All of you guys can follow Steve on X. I posted his account. It is The Gill Report. Make sure to give him a follow. Steve, thanks for dropping by and enjoy your weekend.
Have a great weekend.
All right, good stuff. On the other side of the break, so if Democrats would only fight as hard for the life of unborn babies as they are for pedophiles convicted of rape, that would be amazing. But they are dead against the death penalty for child rapists. So we've got that. Also, there's so much controversy over this bill that was passed on the House and the Senate side. It goes to Governor Bill Lee, which would arm teachers if their districts give them the thumbs up that they're allowed to do that. Now, I'll throw it out to you guys. Do you really think Memphis Shelby County Schools is going to sign off on teachers arming themselves? Hell no. So we've got that also on the other side of the break. Write down our telephone number, 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the morning show. Let me read a couple of your comments before we get to some rapid fire stories in the stack. Mindy writes this about Buc-ee's. One of the owners of this Buc-ee's, did you notice his name? His name is Beaver Applin. That's ironic. Wow, that's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up. Mindy, thank you for sharing that. Justin Johnson writes, it's an election year. Democrats are trying to make us believe inflation has stopped and crime isn't that bad, right? Donna writes this concerning these radical pro-Hamas protesters. She says, amen, Ben. Give them all a free plane ride over there, referring to Gaza. Let them get a real wake-up call. I bet they will be crying to come back home. Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. It's intersectionality at its finest. We played that audio of those girls that were at Columbia. They had no idea why they were actually there protesting. They were looking around. They're like, what are we protesting? If you were to hold up a map for those college students, I would go out on a limb, and I think it's a safe bet to say they wouldn't even know where Gaza is. I mean, I'm shocked they even found their way to the protests because they sounded like absolute morons. Laurel writes, the reason the United States is in such disarray is because communism / liberalism has infiltrated our colleges and have taken over our media. If we can't take those two back, this circus will only grow. Anita writes, no, crime is not down. Justin Jones is the racist. He wasn't screaming racism while attending school, minus the Memphis swagger look and the vocabulary. All he's doing is acting like a self-proclaimed reverend. He's doing nothing for his constituents. He's in the wrong profession. There's no cure for pedophiles except Jesus. And as long as the teachers are trained and weapons concealed where their students cannot overtake or obtain them, then I'm fine with them caring. So the state of Tennessee is getting ready to pass this legislation because it's going to the desk of Governor Bill Lee that would allow teachers to carry, to pack heat. And my boss and I, we were having this conversation and he said, listen, these kids, specifically in MSCS, they're already packing. They're already bringing the guns to school in the classrooms. So if you're a teacher and there's a high probability that the seventh grader is carrying a Glock, I'd want a Glock too. It's a great point. But here is the school board chairwoman, Althea Green. And she's come forward in a statement, but then she got on, was it TikTok? I don't know, Facebook, and had the following statement to say. Cut 17.
I couldn't imagine if I was an educator still in the classroom and a child attacked me. If I had on a weapon, what would have been my first reaction to do to defend myself? And so I'm worried that when situations happen, people won't have time to de-escalate, to think about the best thing to do in conflict resolution.
I mean, so is she saying that if there is a conflict and if she's in that place where someone's in a fight and her first instinct is to go grab a gun, I don't think we're talking about the same thing. I'm talking about when we've seen these perpetrators come in, these assailants, and shoot up schools. I would go out there and say that I would probably wish that I had a firearm. But none of this matters. This is just rhetoric from the left and the right. There are going to be very few school districts in the state that sign off on teachers being allowed to carry. Here's another teacher. Her name is Catherine Vaughn. She's an elementary art teacher at Tipton County and the school district there, Cut 18.
Yesterday was an incredibly difficult day to be a Tennessee educator. I sat alone in my classroom and watched in horror the live feed from our legislative session as our representatives voted to give teachers guns. More guns in schools just means more dead children. And gun deaths are already a leading cause of deaths for children in our state. It's incredibly dangerous to have students in proximity to weapons.
Oh my God. Is there any logic? Is there any stats to back that up? If there are more guns in schools, there will be more dead kids. No. I mean, my solution to this is you've got a lot of veterans that are retired. You've got a lot of ex-cops that would be more than happy to stand outside of a school and protect it. You find it very interesting that our elected officials, when you go to the airport, the security is so thick, and it should be. But when it comes to schools, for some reason, we can't have a gun near or on campus. And I'd argue, the kids are more important than these politicians, so give them security. Anyhow, wanted to read a couple different stories that are on the desk as we scoot to break. Oh man, we're running out of time. So I'll run through as many as I can. So there's a golden retriever that has taken over the internet because it came out of his mom and it's green. So Clifford now has competition. I'm not making it up. So it's a 6-week golden retriever named Shamrock, born into the world in Pensacola, Florida on March 3rd with a green shade. And scientists are saying it was likely caused by the bile in her mom's womb. The owner of the 6-week-old golden retriever said when the puppy was born, they just kept on rubbing the dog's fur and the green did not come off. Anyways, in 2022, a bulldog puppy was also born green. So that's a real thing where your dog could come out the color red, green, blue. It's wild. And a lot more coming up in hour number two. We've got a lot to get to on the local side. Judge Joe Brown, who has been outspoken on the crime problem facing our city. Also, our weaponized judicial system against former President Trump is no fan of. And also, Blexit, where more and more black Democrats are walking away from the Democratic Party and voting up and down the ballot for Republicans. We'll get into that with him. Also, our friends over at Bell Tower Coffee, join us live in studio at 8:35. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Away here, and he's going to talk here about New York City and quality of life issues they say that everyday Americans are dealing with. The Trump team tells us these union workers who are here to talk to the president are paying the price of failed economic policies currently in the country. So the president wants to talk with these people to gain their support. These are hardworking New Yorkers, okay, union members who have been working on this big construction site here in Midtown Manhattan near Trump Tower. And let's just take a listen to what the crowd's saying. So you can hear those chants. And then Brian and Ainsley, you guys can see the former president walking up and down here and shaking hands.
Fox News live on the ground outside of the courthouse in Manhattan where President Trump arrived, as this is The second week where the former president is being convicted or charged with all sorts of allegations, a hush money payment, election interference, campaign violations, and yet his popularity is only rising. You heard those chants, and I saw the video. They were a lot of Black and Hispanic Americans saying that they've got the president's back. Why is that? Because the media would tell us otherwise. Welcome back to The Morning Show. Ben Dieter here. Let's jump into it with our next guest, Judge Joe Brown, who joins us and has been following what has happened in the courthouse. Judge, what do you make of it? And it looks like it is backfiring if it was the plan to convict the president with these allegations, because his popularity and poll numbers are only growing. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? Good morning.
So this is fascinating because I wanted to play some audio. Joy Reid, who is on MSNBC, had the following to say about these judges and these district attorneys, Fannie Willis, which we've talked about with you, in bringing these cases against President Trump. Take a listen. I'll get your response.
For me, there is something wonderfully poetic about the fact that despite the fact that even if convicted, he's not going to go to prison, the first person to actually criminally prosecute Donald Trump is a Black Harvard grad, the very kind of person that his former staff, the people who worked for him, Stephen Miller, et cetera, want to never be at Harvard Law School. But he was. And a Black woman is doing that same exact thing in Georgia. And a Black woman forced you to pay a $175 million fine. Donald Trump is being held to account by the very multicultural, multiracial democracy that he's trying to dismantle. And for me, there's something poetic and actually wonderful about that. It says something good about our country that we're still capable of having that happen. Go DEI. My DEIs are bringing it home.
Pretty remarkable, Judge. I guess this is a huge win for DEI to have Letitia James, Fannie Willis, and Alvin Bragg, the district out of New York and Manhattan, bring these charges against, I guess, a white president.
You know what I'm looking at? I'm not seeing color. I'm just seeing some people who are insinuating themselves into the system and they're being used. They are greedy and they have a streak of criminality that is very broad within themselves. I've been conducting an investigation down in Fulton County or with Fulton County. I have a show Monday with the real Dana and another one Thursday with her and also a radio show on Friday. And we've been bringing in some of the people in Fulton County and listening some to some of the most horrible corruption that you can lay at the feet of someone like Miss Fannie Willis. You see money laundering that she's been engaged in with Wade down there, and you see rank hypocrisy. She's gone after a squad of rappers. She's gone after school teachers under RICO, and then we see money laundering. We see her go in and get an agreement with Wade where both of them can use the money, and he's been paid $720,000, and the matter wasn't even set for trial at that point. You see the President of the United States making about half that. You see the Attorney General of the United States handling all of the government's business making about close to one-third of that. And he's getting paid this. You see money, $7.5 million to catch up with a backlog of prosecutions that seems to have disappeared. And it's getting laundered in this whole thing. And she was stupid enough to take the stand and incriminate herself. But I don't see anything meritorious about what you're looking at. I see an effort to go in and take the Democratic Party's position and implement the mechanisms of fascist oppression to try and control outcomes instead of leaving it to the American public. I'm looking at what Letitia James did, wherein somebody is subjected to this farce that I saw. And I've been doing this for longer than anybody that you see out there talking about it. And what I saw was no evidence at all to support the conclusions relative to the civil fine that was imposed. Mm-hmm. There was no evidence. There was no set of witnesses. What I saw was the same thing that all of us know when we go in to, say, get a second mortgage to, say, finance a business. And you say, my house is worth $720,000. And somebody else might say, no, it's only worth $640,000. Well, are you supposed to, as the homeowner, be penalized for making a claim as to what might be a fair value for your property? No, you're not. There is no victim. The bank says we do this all the time. We got our money on time and we got the interest payments that we were entitled to. That's like me giving you a check and you taking it to my bank and you cashing it, and somebody like Tiffany James, Letitia James coming in and saying, he wrote you a bad check. No, he didn't. I cashed it. Yes, he did. Well, wait a minute. I got my money.
Yeah.
No, he wrote you a bad check.
You wrote, Judge, you wrote on social media, and to your point, you said vote common sense, not propaganda this election cycle. And I'm reading the judge's tweet on X. He says, fascism versus the American way. The former is sponsored by the Rainbow Cult, the latter by normal people. What do you mean by that? And what is at stake in this election?
You have something I've not seen in America before. You can't put a nativity scene in a city hall, but you can put a rainbow flag. I'm not getting on gay people. That's their business. But there is a cult that is associated with LGBTQIA+. And if you think of Buddhism, which is an ancient and honorable religion, so I'm not getting on that. If you think about it, there's no God to it. So here you have a system of philosophy that is ancient and honorable. We've got another one that's not ancient and it's not honorable, but it's a system of philosophy. And we've got acolytes and converts and its followers who are attempting to shove it down America's throat. Your children can't see Christ. They can't see Buddha. They can't see Muhammad. They can't see Jehovah when they are in a public school, but they can see the rainbow cult symbol 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for 12 years. They're trying to build up acolytes. You're getting a disruption of the entire mating game that you have for humanity. You're getting sick things where people can come in who are failed boy athletes who can put on a sports bra and say, I'm a girl, so I can play against the girls. You get all kinds of corruption of the natural order. So what you have here is, instead of having to match up to what is required to build a consensus under the First Amendment, you have suppression of speech. You have mass propaganda campaigns, and we are putting up with it. Now, that's what you get. Bragg has come in here and he has indicted somebody for being the victim of a blackmail attempt. If you had to pay somebody off to keep them from embarrassing you, you got blackmailed. Mm-hmm. That's a felony. So you have a president of the United States of America on trial for being the victim of blackmail. You have a business that complied with the requirements of a gag order not to divulge the terms of a settlement. And they are prosecuted for this. So you've got a corruption of the American way to impose something that cannot stand the light of day when you look at it and open it up to free debate. You've got a press that is in on this. And I swear, if you go back and you research what was going on in the late 20s in Italy and Germany and in the early 30s, you will see exactly the same thing. You even saw in both countries this phrase that you hear so much now. You have to fight misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
So we oppress the ability of the public to discuss things freely. You can't even go on YouTube, if you've got a channel or an operation there, and say certain words, even if it's on the front page of every newspaper in the country, because it's deemed against the interest of those who will feel uncomfortable by being exposed to not pornography, not obscenity, but just matters of public policy.
Yep.
Where are we going here in this country?
It's a great question. And when you look at the issues that actually concern Americans, it's not the rainbow cult nonsense. It is crime. It's the economy leading us to Memphis. I wanted to get your reaction to what happened in Orange Mound over the, I guess this was, yes.
Absolutely absurd. And I have to put that in the context of our mayor going in front of the city council to support a property tax increase. What for?
He says it's to decrease crime, Judge. We've got to tax out the wazoo to build in incentives to decrease juvenile crime.
Go downtown and see the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent that belong to the people of this city. Why? For a tourist trap, we can't even go down there and park, and they're trying to further restrict parking. Go look at the filth on the streets. How are you going to talk about cleaning something up when some fool sold off all of the road cleaning equipment? Look at this mess we've got here where the streets are minefields of potholes and nothing's being done and the money's going downtown. You got $350 million that's supposed to be upgrading stadiums. And what are we doing? How many of us can fit into the FedEx Forum? And that money is going down there, by the way, to build skyboxes. We have $210 million for that vacant lot we now see across from the Redbird Stadium, where somebody bought all of it for just $600,000 instead of close to that in millions. Now, next thing we have is $210 million of tax dollars going to help finance 28 boutique residences down there and some shops. We have $220 million that we are going to spend to help finance an international hotel downtown. What in the devil are we talking about? $500 million to turn the old Mid-South Coliseum into an opera house. $710 million to convert the Liberty Bowl into a soccer arena, and $3.5 billion to build a new football stadium. How can we justify that with what's going on now? And if you want to do something about the crime, the person that's in the mayor's office, the person that sits in the chief of police, as the chief of police, they need to get out and start intermingling with the people on the streets. They need to go down, and so does the sheriff. They need to go in and deal with the fact that the gangs, street gangs, have infiltrated law enforcement in this area. And you get a lot of stuff going on because there's some people protecting their particular posse, which may vary depending upon the shift. You have some things where the line officers are out here on traffic control instead of crime control. Have you seen all of the squad cars out here up and down these freeways busting folk on minor infractions when there's crime going on off of these freeways out in the streets? What in the devil is going on? You see, we don't have what we need, which is effective leadership. We have people who are anxious to take this tax money and do something else with it, which is put money in their pockets. Ask a lot of people, including, let's take the woman that's running down here for General Sessions court clerk. Ask her, if you want to talk about crime, who got paid to take down Jefferson Davis and Nathan Bedford Forrest? Who got paid to store them and how much? Who sold those statues and who to and for how much?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with the properties? Two parks that were given to her and her confederate, Van Turner, for just $1,000 apiece, no bid, that we're still taking care of for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what is going on in this city that this stuff is allowed to happen? Who's going out there to make sure that the individuals who are on uniform patrol are doing their job? Who's going out there so they don't sit five and six cars parked in a convenience store parking lot while there's crime going on two blocks away? Who's going to do something about that?
Not leadership in the city of Memphis, I can tell you that right now. Judge, we are coming up at the end of the break. Everybody go follow Judge on X. You can find his stuff, Judge Joe Brown TV. Judge, thank you for joining us. Spot on. And we need more of Judge Joe Browns out there. Unfortunately, doesn't look like we have many in the mayor's office. Thanks for dropping by, Judge.
Okay, have a great day.
Wow, he's excellent. And he's spot on. Follow the money, everyone. And when you do, you'll see what's actually going on. Open your eyes, Memphis. We'll be right back. All right, so some breaking news. Very excited for the Memphis Botanic Garden. They announced their Live at the Garden lineup for 2024. And actually, we are going to be joined by Sherry May. She's the co-director of Live at the Garden tomorrow morning in studio at 8:35. So country superstar Dierks Bentley is scheduled to kick off the series. That happens on June 6th, followed by the 90s rock band Goo Goo Dolls. Excuse me. That's on July 12th. Classic rock legend John Fogerty is set to perform on August 9th. And then Grammy nominated country artist Sam Hunt will hit the stage on August 23rd. We are going to be giving out tickets in the days to come, so stand by for that. That's very exciting. I've never been to one of the Live at the Garden performances, but it's very neat, the venue. Basically, like, a ton of people just show up, and they pull out their lawn chairs, blankets, coolers, and there's food trucks, bars, and pre-order catering. It's just a really neat venue, so very excited to talk to Sherry May tomorrow. In other news, I sent a media inquiry to this writer for the Commercial Appeal. His name is Mark Giannotto. He's a white dude that has an issue with the fact that the next athletic director at the University of Memphis could be a white person. So he writes this opinion piece, and it got published by the Irrelevant Commercial Appeal. And the headline said, "The next University of Memphis athletic director should be its first black AD." Okay, so we're not going to look at the qualifications of the AD. Has he been a good athletic director? Has he been a bad athletic director? We are going to look at skin pigment, literally. So he writes down through the piece, and I'm not going to read all of it, but in essence, he interviews race baiters. Like, he should have interviewed Tammy Sawyer, if we're being honest. The reason I said I sent him a media inquiry, because our station got into it with Mr. Mark at the Commercial Appeal. Anyways, he interviews Reverend Earl Fisher, the senior pastor at Abyssinian Baptist Church. He's the guy that's pushing for reparations. And here is what the pastor told Mark. Quote, "How long will we continue to miss these opportunities to progress the institution into a place and posture that it needs to be? And here's another opportunity. I just hope we don't miss it." Goes on to basically say, simply put, the next Memphis athletic director should be a black one. Now, I'm going to throw it out to our listeners. Imagine if you just replaced this headline with a white AD. Reading, "The next University of Memphis athletic director should be its first white athletic director." I mean, it's quite unbelievable. And if you read down through the piece, Bill Hardgrave, the president that came from Auburn University, is in the hot seat because he's a white dude that came from, I guess, a white school in Auburn, an SEC school. And you got to go back to the history books on this one, because you had the NAACP, excuse me, coming forward and blasting the next potential president of the University of Memphis because he wasn't a black guy. And when President Hardgrave took the position, he had to basically go through DEI training. And Mark, with the Commercial Appeal, points that out, and I'll read a little bit of it. "The University of Memphis president heard it from the only two black members of the Board of Trustees when his hiring was made official back in 2021, when he made his personal commitments to them about diversity. Hardgrave then heard about it last year when the current president of the Tennessee NAACP chapter, the current president of the NAACP Memphis branch, and the former of the, I can't go on, all of the black leaders in the city of Memphis met with him to ask about, among other things, minority staffing through the university, including sports. So Mark goes through and says, basically, if you look at the makeup of the basketball team, shocker, there are more black athletes than white athletes. So therefore, that needs to be reflective within the hiring of the next AD. Then he goes through and ends with this, and I'll get back to the point of all of this nonsense. He writes, there's a lot at stake with this hire. There's also a chance to make a statement about the core mission of the university. Memphis should not let this moment pass by, not when there's a straightforward path to making history. I mean, is the core mission of the University of Memphis to pick people based on their skin color as opposed to their merit? Again, this is a city where race trumps everything. So anyways, KWAM responded, and it blew up, and we had a lot of black and white residents of the city of Memphis, Shelby County, agreeing with us, saying the next pick of the AD should be the most competent, qualified person, not their skin color. Anyways, he responds to KWAM, and he basically blasts us as saying, we are trying to incite a culture war. No, Mr. Mark, with the commercial appeal, you're the one that infused race into your headline. So anyways, I reached out to Mark. I gave him our studio line, 901-260-5926, inviting him to break down what he called the nuance of his opinion piece. KWAM, we have not heard back. We're still waiting. The invite is always open. But curious to hear from our listeners, should the next AD be picked on merit or race? 901-260-5926. We'll be right back.
I saw it on Facebook this morning, I think probably from a Channel 3 post, and I was pretty happy. Bucky's is great. I've been to several of them. It is really hard to explain why a gas station is so special. You have to see it, I think. It's just so enormous, and they have, it's like an event. It's like a destination.
Bucky's is coming to West Tennessee. How exciting is this? Welcome back to the morning show, everyone. Bucky's, known for its clean restrooms and its beaver nuggets, is coming to Fayette County, which is right outside of us. It's actually going to be exit 28 off Interstate 40 in Galloway. That's just east of Shelby County, the line there, a few miles outside of Memphis. Now, it was posted on Facebook by a state senator, Paige Wally, and he said, basically, Bucky's, welcome to the Fayette County, another great economic and commercial achievement for our district. Are you guys pumped about this? I mean, we are seeing more businesses come to this area. I wonder if it's in an effort to build up the city, which is going to be Blue Oval, because there is a lot happening there. I'm pumped about this because I will get to go to Bucky's for the first time. I have yet to be there, so I feel like I'm not the right person to be talking about this. I am hyped up for every Bucky lover in our listening audience. And what is it about Bucky's? That's the question that I'm asking. Is it the clean bathrooms? Because any gas station that has a clean bathroom, they deserve a spot here in this area. So I've had the beaver nuggets, and I'm not a fan. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. Someone was telling me they have great brisket, and I love brisket. So the more you know. Again, he says it's like a vacation destiny. And in Biden's America, maybe we just cancel our plans to the Turks and Caicos or Disneyland and just go to Bucky's, which, again, it would be interesting when this actually turns into an actual physical location. The Stan Beard, he's the director for Bucky's of their real estate and development. They said, basically, we're pleased that the Galloway project is taking shape. So there is a possibility that this doesn't happen. Just know that is how these projects can go. But he said, we've still got work ahead of us, but Bucky's is continuing its process towards making Galloway our first home in West Tennessee. If you're interested when this does become an actual physical location, I know a lot of young people are complaining about the minimum wage in Tennessee, which is like $7 and a couple quarters. you'll get the starting pay for this gas station is $17.19 an hour plus benefits. So how neat is that? So we'll be following that news. Also coming in from our state legislature, there's a lot happening this week because they're getting ready to wrap up the legislative agenda. But this one is really imperative, specifically when it comes to juvenile crime. And it was led by State Senator Brent Taylor and also Representative John Gillespie. The parental accountability passing both chambers this week, now headed to the desk of Governor Bill Lee. So how it will work, essentially, if parents of kids who commit a crime, they'll first of all get a slap on the hand. Then if their kids are back out there stealing more cars, then it gets more serious, i.e. they'll get fined $1,000 for each offense following the first one. Now, Democrats are adamantly against this because they say we're already living in poor conditions here and the economic stability in this area is at an all-time low. And so a lot of these parents aren't going to be able to pay that grand when their kid steals a car. Well, in the legislation, as I was reading through it, if parents can't afford that $1,000, they're going to have to go downtown or to Raleigh or North Memphis and pick up trash. So is that going to start the conversation the parents need to have with their kids, which is, you are not going to steal a car anymore, because if you do, not only are you going to be in trouble, but your mom and dad are going to be in trouble. If I were to steal a car, first of all, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I guess you go on TikTok and there's like the Kia challenge, and it's a really convenient way of using like a USB that you plug in your phone. And the next thing you know, you can finagle your way into a car and steal it. But if I were to bring home a Kia, a Tesla, a Dodge Charger to the front yard of my parents' home, not only would they be upset, I mean, they would turn my butt over to authorities immediately. Like, the whole, like, maybe a parent gets a slap on the wrist, that would never happen because my mom would send me to the jail. Anyways, that is one that we are going to follow, because maybe, just maybe, there will be some accountability towards the parents of these children committing crime. In other news, so this was quite controversial, but it did draw bipartisan support among Democrats and Republicans, because they say that we have an issue in our courtrooms where we've got these 10 criminal courts and the judges aren't showing up and doing their job. You've got the state legislature looking at a place like Shelby County, the lack of getting through these trials, and saying, you know, if they're not going to show up and do their job, we are going to just take away their judgeships. And there were two of them that we were potentially going to lose with this legislation. It was Senate Bill 2517 that would eliminate these seats held by former Judge Melissa Boyd. She resigned after pleading guilty to criminal charges earlier this month. The other one was Judge Mary Wagner, who was recently appointed to the Tennessee Supreme Court. So the state looked at it, said, you're overjudged. We're going to take away these two judge seats and send them to different districts in the volunteer state. Brent Taylor, London Lamar, people on the polar opposites of the political spectrum said, no, we can't afford that right now. We need our judges. Anyways, that didn't go in favor, and it looks like we will be losing the judgeships. Meanwhile, the world is watching as these pro-Hamas demonstrations are gaining momentum now, as different higher places of learning, places like Yale, NYU, now they've gone to Texas. I believe Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, said at the presser in front of Columbia yesterday that these demonstrations have now infiltrated 200 campuses. So they're only picking up momentum. Now, they're really rowdy, and the anti-Semitism that we're hearing from these quote-unquote demonstrators, as the mainstream media would call them, is appalling. You would think it's the 1930s. But this was a bizarre moment yesterday when it broke up into salsa, dancing, and classical music. This is a new way to protest what is happening in the Middle East. Take a listen to this in Code 14. Thank you. So they look like literal human praying mantises out there on the front lawns of their universities, doing the jazz hands, the salsa dancing, and whatever the crap that was. And again, this is going to encourage a ceasefire where Gazans and Hamas set down their weapons and there will be peace in the Middle East. This is negotiations with school administration officials are going south. And they're running out the clock is what's happening, because Columbia, for example, they cleared the rest of the calendar. You guys are all going home. We're not doing the rest of these school classes because they can't contain these demonstrations. Now, last hour we played Heather McDonald, and she was on the Megyn Kelly show yesterday. And I thought her take on this was so remarkable, because a lot of these students want to feel like they're a part of something. What was she calling it? It was like Selma adjacent, where they want to become the modern day MLKs. And this is their way of doing that. And here was her take. Take a listen in Cut 12.
I remember in the 1990s, you would have faculty writing op-eds in the New York Times saying, oh, where's the student protest? No, you know what? Here's the only thing you're obliged to do and should do on a college campus is learn, shut up and learn some history. Shut up and learn some chemistry. Shut up and learn some literature. Listen to Mozart, listen to Brahms, listen to Chopin, study Tiepolo, study John Milton, study the periodic table. There is, you have 4 years to confront and absorb the greatness of people who went before you, who make you look like pygmies. You should really not be heard. We don't care what you think. Conservatives make the mistake of saying, oh, well, college is all about debate and free speech and critical thinking. Yeah, I'm a little less enamored of that concept. What it should be really about is cramming as much knowledge into the empty noggins of these pathetic crybabies as is possible in 4 years. And then if you want to go out after college and debate whether Trump is a fascist or how many sex organs we should lop off of adolescents today, that's fine. But right now, you should be devoted to one thing, and that is overcoming your embarrassing ignorance about the world and your place in it.
Wow. I mean, come on, right? They're paying $90,000 a year to go to these schools, and they're not learning anything. They're trying to school their teachers, and unfortunately, the faculty has completely bowed down to their demands. Completely unacceptable. 901-260-5926. We're going to slip in a quick break. More on the other side with our friends over at Bell Tower Coffee on the other side. Don't go away. All right, so I am a big coffee guy. I love coffee, and somehow I have not yet been over to try the brew at Bell Tower Coffee, which should be a crime, speaking of crime from our last segment. Excited to welcome in Brooklyn White. She's the Community Engagement and Events Coordinator at Bell Tower Coffee. In just a couple days, they're hosting a new festival, which kicks off a new initiative focused on community connection and, of course, coffee. Welcome, Brooklyn. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing really good.
So I was reading down through an artisanal coffee blend. Is that just like a fancy word for like the best coffee in the Mid-South?
Essentially, yes. We have really great coffee, but we also have a really nice cafe. We're a restaurant as well.
Okay. And you also have been the folks that created our KWAM coffee mugs. Now we have two of them. We had edition one in 2021, which was a beautiful blue mug. And then we got these beige mugs, and they were created and crafted there. So you have a pottery studio as well.
Yes, we do have a pottery studio. It's super nice. We have our pottery director, Micah Dempsey. He is so lovely, and he is actually going to have a booth at our event as well. And they have a new style of pottery that's happening right now. It's called paper and clay. So okay. They've acquired that business, and they are going to be presenting new mugs.
Pottery. Are you a potter?
I like to consider myself a potter, but I am no expert whatsoever.
So the interesting thing, Brooklyn, is this is like super trendy now. I mean, I graduated in 2021 and the kids, like after classes, would go throw clay at a wheel. And, you know, surprisingly, it looked pretty dope. And have you created some interesting pieces of pottery? Like, is it a mug? Is it a bowl? Can you make a vase?
So one of the classes they have going on right now is that you can create three small pieces. They also do have a mug class, but the class where you can create the three small pieces is really fun because you get to freestyle. So I have done that class twice so far, and I have a bunch of little cute small pasta plates. At least that's what I use them for. They're kind of curved so that they hold the pasta. So once again, not an expert, but I have my cute little pieces.
So this event is called Taste and Create, correct? It's going to be at Shelby Farms.
Yes.
This Saturday from 11 to 3. So you're telling me, along with the coffee, there'll also be pastries, wine, and a pottery studio.
Yes, and much, much more.
Okay, so what do you want to do with this? I mean, obviously, you're different than just your typical coffee shop. You guys started in 2017, as I understand, Brooklyn, three locations now.
Yes. So we have three locations, one on the Highland Strip, one in Arlington, and of course, one at the Shelby Farms, which is where we are hosting this event. And the purpose of the event is just to invite the community to experience us. We are more than just coffee. We are a cafe, and we are really involved in the community, and we want to show the community our dedication to highlighting what's going on.
The good parts of the city. You know, as my job details, it's reporting a lot of the negative side, but it's nice to see these organizations, these businesses stepping up and showing all Memphis that this is a place where you can come, take a break, and just enjoy the finer things of Memphis, which there are so many incredible things about the 901. Started in 2017, and you were telling me on break, it's really a family at this point. It was started by two friends. You all went to Harding, correct?
Yes, we did. And that is how they met and how I met them as well.
Okay, so that's fascinating. I've got to ask, when it comes to getting out into the community, has it been well received? Obviously, my friends all go to Bell Tower because most of them do the pottery thing. I have not yet done that. But there's a lot of competition out there. So what separates the business from the others in the community?
I think we're just super welcoming. We're a family. It's very cozy in Bell Tower. A lot of people do come into our cafe and restaurant, and they sit down with their friends and they talk before they go into their class. I have seen people go in with their friends and then separate. One stays in the restaurant and then one goes to throw. So it's super nice to see people just enjoying themselves.
I was reading in a press release that this event that will be the inaugural one on Saturday will kick off an initiative where they're hoping to do big events each quarter. The next one, they said, will probably be towards the end of summer, and then smaller events at each location throughout the quarter. Also, the initiative will have community membership programs that allow customers to receive more benefits than Bell Tower regulars would typically receive. Is that correct?
Yes. Super so dope. We are starting a new membership. It's going to be $15 a month. And I know people hear that and they're like, oh, I have to pay more for something. But you do get a free drip coffee or a free Americano every time that you come in with your membership.
Nice.
You get discounts on any food item. And then for the first month of the membership, we'll also be doing 10% off pottery classes.
Very cool. How do you drink your coffee? Now we're just going to step back and talk about coffee.
I love espresso.
Espresso. So is that where they just shoot it up with caffeine shots, essentially? Like, it's one of the more caffeinated drinks, which I'm a big fan of.
So I sometimes just take espresso shots, and it's considered a crazy thing, but I really enjoy just the flavor. But if I want to seem like a regular person, then I go ahead and get a cappuccino, which is literally just espresso and milk.
So that's better than Prime energy drinks, because the FDA just came out and said those things, including Celsius drinks, which I drink, are not actually great for your heart. I drink my coffee black always. Seasonal drinks. I'm a big fan of a seasonal menu. You guys have those.
Yes, and they're always very, very fun. Right now we have a Lucky Charms latte, and it literally has little pieces and marshmallows of Lucky Charms to garnish the drink.
How long have you been in Memphis?
I have been in Memphis my entire life.
What do you love most about the city of Memphis? See, I'm a local, and I'm now a local. I was raised in Pennsylvania. I'm trying to get my Memphian bona fides. What do you love most about the city?
So I am a little bit biased, but I do love Shelby Farms, and it's for the view, but also the food options. I can go there earlier in the day and visit our Bell Tower location, and I'll stay there for quite a long time, and then I'll head over to Coastal Fish Company because they have the best grilled oysters.
Dude, don't even mention Coastal. I'm hungry as is, and they have the best food ever. And you're right about the sites at Shelby Farms. I live downtown, so it's rare that I get out there, but it is the best park, arguably. I mean, I can say that as someone who lives a stone's throw away from Tom Lee Park. You guys have us beat at Shelby Farms. So again, this is going to be this Saturday. Brooklyn, you can check me on if I get anything incorrect. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And all you need to bring is yourself.
Yep, that's all.
All right, Brooklyn White, Community Engagement and Events Coordinator at Bell Tower Coffee. Thanks for dropping by.
No problem.
All right, guys, get out there and enjoy that event at Shelby Farms on Saturday. I'm going to try to get out there and get some coffee, you know? And also, maybe I should try pottery. It would be a good pastime because I need hobbies. All I do is run and consume news, and it shows, right? That's going to do it for the morning show. Miss an interview, of course, you can find those at kwmradio.com. Guys, it's been a lot of fun. Enjoy the day. We'll talk tomorrow morning starting at 7. Take care.